Hey guys, it's 8 p.m. at night, as of the time of this recording. I actually did this recording for this podcast a couple days ago, but I guess I messed up. It recorded on my webcam mic instead of my normal mic, so I'm doing it once more. The episode's going to get released tomorrow. Just letting you guys know, I'm all moved into the new place. I've got the stream studio set up. I've been streaming on Tasteless TV. Definitely come hang out there. It's been a blast streaming every day. And we're basically ready to keep cranking out episodes of the podcast. The only problem now is that the COVID situation here, the coronavirus situation, is total emergency. We've been in lockdown for a couple of weeks. The numbers keep rising. And I just, before I started this recording, discovered that in a few days, we will not be allowed to be have gatherings of more than five people. So I don't know how I'm going to get future episodes recorded, because we usually need about six or seven people to do the recording. I might end up just breaking my rule, basically, and doing some podcast episodes online, because my original goal was to always have these done face-to-face, but this pandemic is fucking that up. So, this was recorded about a little over a week ago. It was with Wolf. I'm sure you guys, if you follow StarCraft or any esports, you've been familiar with Wolf. He's had a lot of success in a lot of different titles, from StarCraft to Heroes of the Storm to Overwatch. But in this episode specifically, we talk about something you guys might not be familiar with. He's made a killing out in Korea as an influencer. He tweets in Korean. He's just gotten a big sponsorship with a Budae Jjigae. A restaurant chain. That Budae Jjigae, by the way, is like a Korean stew that uses spam and hot dog parts. It's very tasty, and it's been trendy out here for the last couple of years. We'll talk more about that in the episode. But, you know, I see so many people who don't handle their social media well, and a lot of times they don't end up getting hired by places, or they're kind of making fools of themselves, I guess. But Wolf is the opposite of that, and he's had incredible success managing his social media account, and I thought it'd be pretty interesting to dive into that. I don't think many of you are familiar with how famous he is out here, but he really is like a mini celebrity out here. One new addition to this podcast is that we managed to get it, we added Korean subtitles to this episode. I might start adding this in future episodes, but with Wolf having a very big following, we decided to spend the extra money and get somebody to subtitle that. We'll see. For future episodes, we'll have them all subtitled. I'm not totally sure yet. We're still mapping all this stuff out. But that was also why it took a little bit of extra time. We had to find somebody who was a professional at that and then get them and hire them to do that. So this is a really cool episode. I'm super proud of him. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Before I get started, though, if you want to keep supporting this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/tastelesspodcast. It's been really hard for us to get new Patreons on there. So if you're somebody who appreciates this podcast and likes the stuff that we're putting out here, do us a favor and throw us, you know, $5 or whatever you got over there. That money goes to directly fund this project that we're working on. You also get access to, you know, behind the scenes stuff, such as the bonus podcast, where there's parts of this that we don't leave into the main podcast. And if you don't have any money, I understand. Just write a good review or tell a friend about the podcast. It's appreciated. Anyways, now let's start this episode with Wolf. Well, dude, it's good to have you on the podcast again. Thank you for coming down.
Thanks for inviting me.
We got to talk about these new sponsorship deals you're doing. You've been crushing it. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Your new Budae Jjigae, which is, Budae Jjigae is Korean for base stew.
Yeah.
A food that was introduced, or I guess was not introduced, it was invented in Korea during the Korean War. It consists of spam and hot dogs, as well as kimchi and Korean ramen and all that stuff. You have a new Budae Jjigae.
Yeah,
I do. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'll tell you guys about it. So the company I'm working with is called King Kong Budae Jjigae, and they're a Budae Jjigae chain out here in Korea. One of the more popular ones, for sure. And I used to go there all the time, actually, because I used to be near one of the offices I worked at out here, one of the studios, I should say. None of us.
So, so this is a Korean restaurant chain?
Yeah, it's a Korean restaurant chain. It's not available outside of Korea right now. A lot of people have been asking me about that, but it's not available yet. Maybe one day. But they contacted me, and they were interested in meeting up. And I didn't know what they had planned, so I went and had a meeting with them. And they told me that they were planning on... They wanted to use me as like a model for a new budaechige menu. And when they, like, in Korean, when you say like a menu, it means like something on the menu, right? So like, we're planning a new menu. It's going to be with you, like, as the model for it, and we want to make it with you. And I was like, oh, you guys want to like build a budaechige together, like, you know, what ingredients we're going to put in. So we had, I was like, yeah, I'm super excited. And obviously I can't say how much, but the offer they gave me was really good. So I was like, yeah, let's start right away. So I signed with them, and then we started building the stew together, what we're going to put in it. And the name of the stew is Migugnom Budaechige, which is basically
like American asshole guy.
Almost. Like, yeah, it's like nom is like a word in Korean. It's hard to translate into English because it's like, it's kind of derogatory, but it's kind of endearing at the same time, almost like bastard or something like that, but like in a good way. But like, they wanted it to be like what Americans would like to be in budaechige. So I was like, a lot of meat, right? And I talked to some of my American friends out here. You know, obviously, you were the first person who showed me budaechige, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah. I was hungover once with you, like one of the first times I went out drinking with you.
It is good hangover food. I mean, it's got the stew and the spices, and then it's meat and cheese and...
It was cool. Yeah, it was cool because like, they were like, well, what do you want? What do you think would be good? And I was like, just a lot of meat, like a lot of ham, a lot of sausage, like hot dogs, stuff like that. And I was like, not so many vegetables. Like, my foreign friends, like, they kind of usually pick around the vegetables because I was thinking like, what would foreigners like? But I'm also, you know, a foreigner out here. And then we came up with a few different ideas, and we tried a lot of stuff. One of the more fun ones that we tried was they tried to make a pizza budaechige. Where we put like a bunch of pizza ingredients in, and that has like a...
Like pepperonis?
Yeah, pepperonis. They had olives in it, and like jalapeno peppers. And then it was the soup base had like pizza sauce base added to it. And it ended up being really spicy, and it was kind of interesting, but I don't think people would really like it. I didn't mind it, but it was like, we were really excited about it. We tested a few different versions of it. We tried it. We were like, nah, this isn't it. And then... we came up with the idea to put macaroni and cheese in the budaechige because I was thinking about when I was younger, I used to eat macaroni and cheese with hot dogs and ketchup. Do you know about that? Did you ever eat this when you were young?
I've definitely seen hot dogs and macaroni and cheese, especially when you're like a little kid.
Yeah. Like,
right?
Really,
like when
really
you're
young.
A kid, like you won't eat anything but like a certain type of garbage that is like got a certain flavor to it. Yeah.
So I was thinking about that. My grandma used to make that for me all the time because I was a really picky eater. I still am. And I was thinking about that, like hot dogs and macaroni and cheese. And so like the boss, the head guy at King Kong, he is also a chef. So he gave a lot of input on what he thought would be good. But then our head chef that they have currently also started brainstorming ideas with me about the macaroni and cheese. And he was like, do you like hamburg steak, which is like hamburg steak, I guess, in English. And I was like, yeah. He's like, I think it'd be good, bacon, macaroni and cheese, and hamburg steak. Because I was telling him a story. I'm like, macaroni and cheese and bacon, macaroni and cheese and hot dogs. Like, I think we're onto something here. I was explaining to them, like, how in Korea, when you're kind of broke and you're kind of poor and you want to eat something, a lot of people just get cup ramen, right?
Yeah.
But in America, I feel like a lot of people eat macaroni and cheese. It's, like, really similar. Like, when I was in college, a lot of my friends got, like, really cheap, you know, Kraft macaroni and cheese and would eat that. So I felt like it fit. They made a few test versions. I tried it and I was like, this is it. This is the one we're going to go with. And that's the one we have. So you've probably seen pictures of it, macaroni and cheese on and stuff. It looks kind of weird, I think, to foreigners, but it tastes really amazing.
No, I have not yet tried it. I'm excited to. I have been seeing pictures of you holding up. This is a very Korean thing where they have the, you know, someone like you hold the dish on camera. We don't really do that as much in Western culture. But it's crazy seeing this, man. So this was like a collaboration between basically your American experiences and then talking to the chefs on staff there and building something together.
Exactly. And, you know, we did a Facebook event thing where we asked a bunch of people like what they would like in budaechige, and like, there were a lot of like really meme answers like chocolate chip budaechige, but there were some good ones in there as well. which is like, you know, there was like one that suggested spaghetti. So we looked into that and we were like, it's not so good. But I was like, oh, it could be okay. Like meatballs and budaechige with like spaghetti type noodles. You know, I was like, oh, I'm interested in that idea. Didn't work out. We tried that.
For the record, we should say that this stew, this Korean stew, there's so many different ways to make it.
Yeah, yeah.
You're basically piling a bunch of cheap ingredients together.
Yeah.
And cranking something out.
The backstory of budaechige is basically during the war, the Korean War, like, there were not a lot of ingredients, and the U.S. military base had a lot of, like, Spam and hot dogs and, like, basic garbage ingredients, and everyone was hungry, and there wasn't a lot of food, so they kind of just put it all together in a stew, and now it kind of had a big resurgence because people started cooking it as, like, you know, a restaurant type dish, like something you would eat with your friends, not just like a survival food. The budaechige back then, they didn't have amazing like paste they were putting into it and great like, you know, flavoring powder. It probably didn't taste that good back then.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically when the country was at rock bottom and they were just putting edible things.
Yeah.
You know, some cabbage, none of it high quality. Just shit you got from a U.S. base.
Yeah, I mean, and can you imagine, like...
Like Spam. Like, Spam out here is actually a delicacy now, which is hard to imagine.
Yeah.
If you haven't been to Korea. But yeah, please go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, if you can imagine, like, eating... if you cook ramen, but you don't put, like, the powder in, you don't put the flavor packet in, like, you know, it was... I think the stew probably tasted something like that with, like, hot dogs and, like, cabbage and Spam and whatever kimchi they could find. And people ate it to survive, but then... Someone liked that idea, and then it became popular in Korea, had a big resurgence. It's also sometimes called Johnsonttang in Korea because Lyndon B. Johnson, when he was visiting Korea, he ate it, and he raved about it. So, like, Koreans started calling it Johnsonttang as well. But, yeah, it's, you know, like you said, it's a put-everything-in-it kind of thing. So there's not one right way to make it, which is why it's, like, one of my favorite foods. The macaroni and cheese ended up being, like, the perfect ingredient because it doesn't taste like macaroni and cheese when you eat it. The macaroni and cheese kind of just, like, melts into the chige, the broth, and it basically tastes like you put a slice of cheese in your ramyeon, which is, like, what we call cheese ramyeon out here. I know it's something that you really
I'm
like.
I'm a big fan of that. Yeah, a lot of Koreans will throw a slice of, like, American cheese. Is it American cheese? Kraft cheese? Is that the same thing as American cheese?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say so.
I think it is, yeah. But yeah, you'll throw a little slice of that on your ramen. It's absolutely delicious.
Yeah. The broth just kind of tastes like that, a little bit thicker. And it's got a ton of meat. And so far, the reviews, I was really nervous about it when it came out. It's been like out for almost 2 weeks now, I want to say. I was really nervous how people would respond because I have such a reputation for, oh, he loves budaechige. He knows all the budaechige restaurants. I have a ton of YouTube videos, Instagram posts about budaechige. And I was worried, like, are people going to like this? And a lot of people have, like, done blogs. I should explain, I guess, to the viewers as well. Like, in Korea, we have something called Naver, which is basically Google.
It's a not as good Google.
And it categorizes popular news articles and blogs. And
yeah.
So when you search for something, it lists a bunch of blogs. So if you search for my budaechige item on there, you're going to see a bunch of people's blogs of them, what they thought about, their pictures of it. So I was, like, looking through that, and I'm like, what are people saying? But all the reviews so far I've seen have been good, so I'm pretty relieved. I mean, I knew it was good because I tested so many versions of this.
That's going to be pretty scary, right? Because you're putting yourself out there, right?
Yeah.
And this is, like, pretty different from anything that you've done before.
No,
any of our circle of friends. And so, yeah, I mean, you don't know how it's going to be received, especially by Koreans that are eating it. It matches your palate, but it was well-received?
Yeah, so far it's been really well-received. People really liked it. And the first few days I wanted to kind of just, like, let it sit, like, when it got announced, because people knew I was working with King Kong, like, it was public, but there wasn't, like, a big viral tweet or anything, so people didn't know necessarily, and I kind of liked it that way, and I, like, let it sit there for a few days, and then I made my tweet about it just last weekend, I want to say, and it crashed their website, so I was pretty happy with how the promotion went, and then now a bunch of people have been trying it and tweeting at me about it, pictures they've been eating it, they've been liking it, so it's a pretty surreal experience for me. Like, I want to open a budaechige restaurant one day, but I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. I've never run a restaurant, I don't have that kind of experience. I don't know who I'd even hire, like, so this is
kind
of,
like, would that even mean that you'd work there, or would you own
or
it?
Or would I just, like, put some ideas in people's heads, and they would run it, and it wouldn't really be mine, like,
yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about that yet, but this is a really cool, like, middle step for me, I feel like, to getting closer to that.
So, one of the things I find most interesting about this is that you came out here along with a few other foreigners to work in the esports. And you've done esports for basically the entire time you've been here.
Yeah.
But now you've also branched into this other medium, which is being a expat or an immigrant, or as Koreans say, a foreigner, and entering the Korean side of entertainment, and you're succeeding at it very well. How did you end up coming here and then going into that? Because there's lots of people out here that work in television or entertainment that it's much more focused on, like what I do, right? Like I broadcast to sure. Americans or anybody who's English speaking. But you're now moving into an area where there's a appeal for Koreans. So how did you end up making that move?
I noticed a lot of patterns in Korean culture with like social media. For example, a lot of people don't know this, but in Korea and also in Japan, Twitter, which is a really popular social media platform, you know, worldwide, you know, in the Western side of things, we usually like a tweet. If we like want to show it, say like, I agree with that, or like, I want to show that to people, you retweet it, right? But if you're like, ha, that's pretty funny, like you like it usually. But in Eastern culture, especially Korea and Japan, people retweet it instead. So things tend to get viral extremely quickly because these things just get shared like crazy. You can see a very popular tweet in your timeline, it might have like 100 retweets but 3,000 likes. You see a tweet like that in Korea, it might have like 7,000 retweets and 4,000 likes. So it's shared just so much exponentially more. So I thought, if I could do something funny and like make, because you know, I'm a foreigner and sometimes it's funny when the Koreans find it interesting when foreigners like embrace Korean culture or make jokes about it. So for a few years, maybe like back in, I want to say 2015 or so, I tried to tweet some memes and jokes in Korean. And like, I had a very small Korean following at that time from StarCraft. And, you know, it got a few likes here and there. But I was like, eventually...
You can just keep talking.
Eventually, I'll get the big tweet, right? The big tweet that's like really funny and it gets a lot of retweets and then people will be happy with that. And then they'll look back at all the other stuff I've done in Korean and they'll be like, that's great. Like, I like this guy. He's funny. They had one big tweet. And this was all just because I thought it'd be fun. Like, I wanted to have I wanted it to be a hobby. I wanted to interact with the Korean esports fans more than anything else. I wasn't trying to hit like mainstream. Because I had done some, you know, some events in Korea for StarCraft where like I got to interact with the Korean fans in the audience. Sometimes the Korean commentators will pull me onto TV and I'd speak Korean. I did a tournament called the Kespa Cup, which ironically was won by a foreigner, Neeb.
Watching that, yeah.
Where they had me and Brendan interview the players in Korean as well, as best as we could. So I wanted to interact with the Korean fans, and then I had this big tweet when I was in China where I didn't really like the food, and I was kind of stuck in this hotel. So I had one of my Korean friends send a bunch of ramen, like instant ramen over. I took like a picture with a bunch of instant ramen. I was in like my... hotel robe, you know, and I'm laying on the bed and I've just got this like big thing of ramen and I have this crazy face. The content of the tweet was basically just like, I can't really hear. I brought all this ramen. Like, I'm a crazy guy. Like, look at what I've done. And I remember tweeting it and then going to the bathroom and then coming back to my phone and I had like 400 retweets and like before a minute and a half had passed and I was like, oh, this is it. This is the tweet where like, maybe Koreans will look at what all the content I've been trying to make on Twitter, like the jokes I'm trying to make on Instagram. And everything blew up at that moment, like overnight. And then suddenly I had a bunch of people trying to sponsor me, trying to send me things. Hey, can you tweet something viral about my product?
It seems like at that moment you basically cracked like the influencer code for social media. Because yeah. that was an Instagram post, right?
Yeah, it was Twitter and Instagram, but mostly Twitter. But like, it got reshared so many times that like, I got like 10,000 Instagram followers overnight. I woke up, I was like, oh my god, this is crazy. But the thing I always believe about social media, if you're trying to like suddenly blow up and get big, a lot of people, you know, you see these tweets on Twitter, right? Or you see them. It doesn't have to be Twitter; it could be Instagram. But sometimes you see these posts that blow up, and then like the guy who made the post has. You look at his page, and he has like 200 followers. And then his like next post is like, follow my SoundCloud, by the way, ha ha ha. He's like, I see this blew up, so like you guys should follow me because I'm funny. Then you go to that person's page and like all of their tweets are boring and uninteresting and unrelated to the thing. So I really believed if I kept consistently putting out things I thought were funny, memes and stuff in Korean, that when the big tweet happened, people would look at my feed and they'd be like, oh, he's got some other funny stuff in there too. That's what I think is like really important if you're trying to grow your social media is like be consistent about what you're posting. It's just if you have like the one big flash in the pan moment, if people check out your stuff and they're like, oh yeah, he had this amazing funny political tweet, but then I went to his page and he was just talking about how like he hates waiting in line for coffee. Nobody cares. Like, nobody wants to follow you, right?
Now, the fact that you managed to catch that wave is kind of crazy, because there are so many people on social media literally just trying to do this all the time. Do you feel like you knew what you were doing by trying to catch this? Or was there, how do I say this? There's like some instinct, like, I think I've got a feel for this. Or were you confident, I know this is going to work? Or were you completely shocked when you put a tweet out or an Instagram post out and said, whoa, holy shit, they're really responding to this?
This was like the most extreme thing I'd ever tried. Like, literally having people send, because I was doing a Heroes of the Storm event in Beijing. I think it was Beijing. Yeah, it was Beijing. And I was there for like a whole month. So like, I had time to have someone actually physically send me the stuff to my hotel and got it. And I was like, this will be funny. I don't know if people will believe me. You know, it's kind of a crazy thing that I'm doing. I didn't think it was gonna explode, but I was like, let's try this one. Like, let's put in like this insane effort into this crazy tweet. And back then, a lot of my Korean tweets, like the big complicated ones, I'd have an idea. I'd tell my Korean friends, like, hey, this is what I want to say. What's the best way to say it? Is there a funnier way to say that? A lot of my Korean friends would like help me to like make the memes, right? A lot of the Korean casters I work with. And when that tweet blew up, I got a lot of followers, but I knew that if I did have a tweet that blew up, like I was saying, that's why it goes back to the retweets thing. I knew if like it got virally shared enough, and people would look at my Instagram and see the other stuff I'd posted and be like, oh, I think this guy's pretty funny. Like, I was pretty confident that if I had the big breakthrough, that people would look back and say, okay, yeah, this one didn't get that many retweets, but like, it's pretty funny. Or like, this Instagram post doesn't have any likes, but like, it does now, right? Because people are finally seeing it.
I guess it's also connected to the fact that every time you post something, it's supposed to be memey or celebratory, or like, look at what I did.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're building an expectation that like, okay, here we go. Like, are you familiar with this guy? I can't remember his name all of a sudden. He's on Instagram, and he has Joe Rogan's a fan of him. He uses that face swap technology, and he's always making
Deep fake stuff?
Yeah, it's like cheap, shitty deep fake stuff, but he's huge on Instagram now. I'll try to put his ID in the comments or in the video description. But yeah, it's like every time he puts out any comedy bit, you're excited before it plays. You know this yeah, is going to be good. If you're doing that, then are you trying to minimize how much you're putting out? Because some people on, like, let's take Twitter, for example, are really prolific. I mean, there are people that literally tweet every 20 minutes, almost,
yeah,
if they're not asleep. And then there's people that will put something out every couple of days even. What's your approach to that?
When I first started tweeting and when everything was blowing up, I was like, I've got to put out a lot of stuff now because I got to be consistent and I want people to think I'm funny. And the first few days, like, a lot of my stuff got a lot of likes because I was getting so many followers and like people were just looking at my page nonstop. So like for the first 2 weeks after that big tweet, I was like, wow, this is growing. This is crazy. But then it like went down big time because I was posting too much and I was like, the quality of what I was posting wasn't as good. Then I had to like start one-upping what I was doing. And like for a little while there, it was like, I don't know, it felt like I was trying to run a circus or something, like of like one-upping like the craziest next thing I was going to do. One of the tweets I'm really proud of that I did was, so I actually got sent a bunch of soju by one of the soju brands out here, Chomchorom. And they contacted me because in my profile, actually, all my profile was English esports stuff, like on Twitter. But one line was in Korean, which I thought Chomchorom tasted better than Jamiso, which is the more popular soju brand out here. And so, like, one of their managers saw, like, one of my other viral tweets, and he was like, oh, you guys, you like our stuff. Like, you know, you esports guys, you guys like that? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, well, mostly just me, but, you know, that's, I have that in my profile for a reason. He's like, yeah, it says you're an esports caster, but then the only thing you have in Korean is that you like our soju brand better. And I was like, it's true, I do. And then he was like, I'll send you some soju. And then he sent me, like, 200 bottles of soju to my house. So there's a guy carrying these soju bottles up on his back. He brings, like, 4 boxes of soju bottles, which was, like, I think about 40 bottles maybe. And he's, like, carrying, he's, like, really tired and exhausted, and he puts it down. And I'm like, thank you. I say to the guy, like, in Korean, like, thank you, like, very much. And I'm like, well, I guess he sent a lot. And he just like walks down, and I'm like, okay. Then he's like bangs on the door again. He's got four more boxes, and the next thing I know, I have 200 bottles of soju in my house.
That's fucking insane, dude.
And I know they wanted me to do something funny with it, right? That's why they sent it to me. So I made like a soju pentagram out of the soju bottles and like sat in the middle of it. And that was like a tweet I thought would be really funny, and people really liked it. And that was the kind of thought I was like, okay, I got to do stuff like this now, or else like, people are gonna be like, yeah, I liked his other tweet, but like the new tweet's like not that funny. It's not that big. So I had to do a lot of stuff like that to keep growing. Was at some point like people were just like, okay, like yeah, you took another picture with a funny face, but I don't care. Like, what's the next thing? You know?
Do you get any hate? I mean, do you ever try to put something out there and people are like, fuck you, man? Like, do you?
Yeah,
because Twitter can be pretty bad.
Sometimes I do get Koreans. I mean, no Westerners really give me hate. Like, sometimes people will unfollow me because it's really hard to manage a Twitter account that's like in English for esports, then in Korean. I should have made two separate accounts. I really messed that up. I should have made a second account early on because now I have this esports account where I get a lot of likes on my esports tweets and I get a lot of likes on my Korean tweets. But like,
I guess if people aren't bilingual, they're just seeing.
Yeah, they're like, well, I don't know.
Something they can't understand.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, I think I could have grown a lot more if I had put a separate one, but it's too late now. Western fans get confused, and they're like, I don't understand it. But to a Western fan, they're like, that's cool, I guess.
I guess a Western fan would recognize the Korean alphabet.
You know, a Western fan just looks at it, and they're like, yeah, it's Korean. He's big in Korea,
sense.
I guess.
He's in Korea, yeah.
And they're like, I don't know why he's famous. This is kind of weird, but it's kind of like quirky, and like I think some people are like, so what's going on with that? That's weird. No Koreans really get upset about my esports tweets that I post, but some Koreans get really upset. Like I see hate comments on my YouTube channel or like on my Twitter sites, I'll get people responding, just being like,
what's the worst? Is it YouTube?
I'd say YouTube is probably the worst nowadays. At the very beginning, people were like the worst on Instagram. People would just post people would post like, oh, I know he's just here because he wants to sleep with Korean girls. And I know he's just like every foreigner. And it was like really weird. Or like, oh yeah, well, he's just white and he likes budae-jjigae. So I guess like now he's cool. I'm like, well, I like budae-jjigae too. But I'm Korean. So I guess I can't get this many followers. Just stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes a lot more.
It's always
vulgar.
The most uncharitable take on
there's
your
a lot
existence.
Of there's a lot of phrases in Korean that are like really racist to mess up, and I won't say them. But there's some messages I DMs I would get where I'd be like, wow, like okay, you exist. But eventually it just went away, like for the most part. It's much better now. Nowadays YouTube comments sometimes like there'll be some haters that'll be like, well, but this white guy thinks he knows everything. Like, why do we even listen to him just because he can speak Korean? Or like,
YouTube is brutal, man. I had a big cast. This is like 2 years ago, and I hadn't casted in a little bit for an overseas event. You know, there's been some ups and downs with Blizzard as far as them scheduling events and stuff. So I went and looked at what I thought was my best broadcast, and kind of reviewed it and like, what do I like about this? And then I scrolled down to the YouTube comments and had all my confidence destroyed. Yeah. And I thought, oh, I just can't fucking look at this stuff.
You know, if you watch like an incredible piano solo on YouTube, like the best one you'll ever see, they'll be like one of the top three comments will be like, does anyone else think his fingernails are too long?
Yeah.
You know? You know, it's just like there's always someone who's angry. I've had a few like Westerners hate on my YouTube videos as well. I don't know why, but it's just weird. Like I don't understand it. But I think there's just a lot of angry people out there, and they just want to spew it at something.
Yeah, and they're probably not using their time that well by just writing comments all the time.
Yeah, it's like you watch.
It's not even
video.
Like, oh, thanks, this is cool, or wow. It's like, fuck you, man.
Yeah, you just watch my video, and then you're just gonna write something hateful about it, and it's like often just not true. So I'm like, you probably didn't really watch it. You just want to be mad at something.
Now, did you get much hate when you put out this budae-jjigae product? Was there people that were... I mean, you basically... I guess an American equivalent of this would be like if you were part of a new like Taco Bell taco or something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's these restaurants all over the country. And so I guess it'd probably be a better example would be like the new TGIF... whatever. Sure. Steak. And but did you get much negative feedback from that?
I thought a lot of people would be like, well, he's a sellout now. And a lot of people did say that, but like kind of in like a endearing way of like, wow, he made it, you know. That was the overall reception, which made me really happy, as people were like, I'm glad he actually is making money doing this now. Like, he was just making jokes before, and now like he's actually made it.
That's funny, because when we first were out here, I was out here like a little bit earlier than you, but I know when you came out here, there was a weird attitude. Let's just take esports, for example.
Oh, for sure.
Where people are like, whoa, are you making money doing this? Like, they're offended somehow. And, you know, in reality, it's like, well, I mean, I'm trying to make a living. I'm trying to get by. I don't want to have a second job doing something I hate. I remember even when Dan and me opened, this is back when we sold peripheral items ourselves with thehandsomenerd.com, and people were like, wait a fucking minute. What kind of profit might they get off this? And it's like, we're trying to make money, man.
Yeah.
I feel like not just in esports, but everywhere, that weird attitude has started to go away.
Yeah, I do think it is going away. Korean fans have always been really supportive about the stuff I've done, ads I've done in the past. I did an ad with Yo-Gi-Oh, which is like, you could think of it as like Uber Eats or Postmates if you're American, just like a delivery service app, which existed like way before the States was doing this. And like, everyone was really supportive. Like, no one was like, wow, like, I guess he's just going to make money now and he's not going to be the community guy. He's the money guy. Everyone's been pretty supportive. I've done a lot of content recently, and I've made a YouTube channel, which I didn't have until very recently. And I find that a lot of people are just generally happy when I do get a big break. But at the same time, like, I'm actually, especially on my YouTube channel, which only has like 60,000 subs right now, it's growing, but it's not huge or anything. I get a lot of sponsorship opportunities. Like, a lot of people contact me and ask me if I could just say like, this video is sponsored by, like, something very basic like that. And I've rejected basically all of them so far, because I feel like my channel's not ready for that yet, and I do want to grow it organically, and I don't want to turn people away, and I don't want people to think I'm doing this for money, because yes, I would like to make money with my YouTube channel. But this started as a hobby for me, and I want to see where it goes before I start trying to like milk it, you know what I mean?
There was a big scandal in Korea, I think it was 4 months ago, where all these influencers were, all these influencers were basically being paid, these are Korean influencers, were being paid to promote products, but they weren't saying it was an ad.
Yeah.
And that was a huge fucking scandal out here. Now, I know that some of that has sorted itself, but was there any trepidation there? Obviously, you're being completely transparent.
Yeah, so it affected some of my friends, some of my Korean YouTuber friends, and a lot of them had to like make statements. Even though they didn't do anything, people were suspicious of them. No one was really suspicious of me during that time. Also, during that time, I had been like on a break from YouTube videos. I hadn't really uploaded anything for a few months because I was changing my visa, and I was going back and forth between the States, and yeah. I was in quarantine twice, so like, I like basically couldn't film. So my YouTube channel was kind of like in this stasis mode at that moment. So a lot of people actually in the YouTube comments were like, a few people were like, it's really weird Wolf hasn't posted during this time. Like, what's going on? But I was pretty transparent on my Twitter and stuff. Like, hey guys, I'm in the States right now. I'm traveling.
Yep.
But the only thing that really happened with me was I just put a disclaimer on all my videos when that scandal started. I pay for all the restaurants I go to, I pay for myself. And I think maybe besides one video, I make it a point to show myself paying at every restaurant I've done, even before the scandals happen, because I want people to know, like, I went to this restaurant on my own volition and paid for it myself.
Were you ever offered it for free? Like, to be honest, if I were in your position, I would have just probably, if they offered it to me for free, I would have been like, yeah, okay.
I'm trying to think if that ever happened. People have given me, like sobis, like where like they give you like a free extra thing, like which happens in Korea all the time.
It's an English word, service, but yeah, in Korean it's basically saying like this is on the house.
Yeah, it's on the house, basically, is the best way to put it. Yeah, that's happened a few times, but like I don't think anyone's ever offered me anything for free. But I've also only contacted a few places in advance to ask if I could film. Usually like places that are really busy, like, hey, are you guys cool if we film, because I know you guys are really busy. But in general, I don't even tell the people. I just show up to the restaurants, and like at that moment when I show up, I'm like, hey, we're going to film. Is that okay? And they always say yes. And then I pay. And most of the time, and I like it this way, most of the time when I go to these small restaurants and film, the people don't know who I am. They don't know who I am. They don't know how big my YouTube channel is, how small it is. They don't know. And I like it that way because I want I want the experience for my videos to be like I'm a regular customer, just like anyone else who goes there. So that's important to me. I have had offers of people being like, hey, please come to my Budichige restaurant and do a review. Everything will be free. And I just want to get my place out there. And like, I just refuse those because
I should say too, the scandal is that people were being paid, usually paid and not just getting stuff for free, but being paid money.
Yes.
And we're not saying it was an ad. Like
when the hashtag ad thing in the States.
Hashtag, in the US. Yeah. Or I guess in American law, I should say. When I put an Instagram post out that's sponsored, I put ad, hashtag sponsored, just so that it's not being deceptive. But this was like a new thing in Korea where people were just sort of not being straightforward about it.
Yeah, I mean, you and I have talked about this when the scandal was happening, but it was kind of strange to me and weird that Korean fans were kind of like suddenly taken aback by this. Like, wait, you mean they got paid for that? Which, you know, to me, like... I
felt like it was common knowledge.
Yeah, I'm like,
at that time.
I have a YouTube channel. You and I have sponsors for a lot of the broadcasts we do. It's like, yeah, I mean, as it turns out, like, they're not just that guy who has 2 million subs on YouTube is not just like doing it for the fans, yeah. Right? Like, I mean, he is, but
he's not like just discovered this face cream that for some reason he's going to use now.
Yeah, you know? So I thought it was weird that people were suddenly like surprised by this, but a lot of people did literally say like, I didn't get paid to do this. But they literally had been paid to do that. Those were people who got in like really big trouble. All those people shut their channels down. They're probably never coming back. But some people like you know had sponsors, but they didn't say like I got paid to do this. But they also didn't say like this is what I like. They just showed they use a certain product. Like for example, just for argument's sake, like if I like instead of having this cup, I had a specific brand of beer and I showed it and I said, I really like this just casually off the cuff because I got paid to say that. So a lot of people got in trouble.
That is illegal now, correct?
Yeah. I think legislation is being pushed for it right now. I don't know if it's passed or not, but yeah, I think there will be a thing where hashtag ad is a thing in Korea, hashtag guango. and now like pretty much every YouTuber and YouTube added this feature a long time ago, is putting like this video includes, paid promotion,
and like promotional content.
You'll see that on YouTube a lot, like where YouTube adds this like disclaimer. One of my videos I did, with, Nongshim, the ramen company, I was paid to do that video, but like that was the whole point of the video. Like it was very clear and that's the only one of my videos that says that. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people were kind of like trying to like sneakily get paid to do stuff and people found out. Now it's kind of like everyone's got to disclose it. And a lot of people's models for how they're making money on YouTube are changed now. And they're going to have to, you know, be more upfront or they're going to get eaten alive by the community and then later the law.
You've had the success on social media, which is, I mean, really, it's almost at like the highest level that you can have. And we're at a point in time where everybody has to be on social media, like it or not, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to ask this question from like an esports perspective here. And you're free to disagree with me if you think I'm wrong. I'm more interested in just kind of having the conversation. There are so many people in esports I see who are tweeting, and not only are they not growing their brand and helping themselves, but on some level they're self-destructing. And this is, we can go outside of esports as well. I mean, there's a certain number of celebrities in the U.S. that will just basically self-immolate. Like, had they not had a Twitter account, it probably would have been better for them. They didn't need it to begin with. They were already so big, but they just can't stop putting stuff out there. And I just see this on such a large level with, like, so many people that are just saying things that are gonna never mind the idea of this won't get them sponsored. I'm talking more on the lines of this won't get them a job.
Yeah.
Now,
I agree with that. I see it all the time.
Twitter. You've never made this mistake.
Well, I think it's really easy to avoid certain controversial things, right? Like everyone has political opinions, but you don't have to tell everyone what your political views are. You can keep that private. Like, that's something I like to keep private. I have my own strong opinions, right? But I like to talk to my friends about that at the bar. I don't need to tell people, you know, around the world nonstop how I feel about certain issues, certain political candidates, certain, you know, scandals that happen, what my stance is on them. Especially in Korea, I never take a stance on big things like that, generally speaking, with a few exceptions. But Generally speaking, I don't take a big stance on that because I don't need the world to know how I feel about these sorts of things. And I appreciate, like, that no one demands that of me either, generally speaking. And I think for some people, like the Korean celebrities, like they kind of get pushed into making a statement one way or the other on not issues that are even about them, but about other celebrities. And they feel like they have to make a statement. And I'm pretty glad that I'm in a comfortable place.
It happens in Korea and this. Yeah. It happens everywhere.
Yeah.
Like there's been so many things that have happened in our industry where I'm like, I don't have an opinion yet. Or I don't want to put myself out there, or we're both American in U.S. politics. I'm like, well, I don't feel like I need to be out there saying everything I think all the time. That's what my I can share my opinions with my friends, but there's a degree of safety, right, on what you will put yourself out there. Because I don't know, I always feel like, why do you have to say everything to everybody all the time?
I think it's addicting to some people when a certain topic becomes so big and everybody there's almost like a circle jerk of like agreeing about a certain issue, and the more you tweet about it, the more likes you get, and it becomes addicting. You feel like, ooh, I saw this specific tweet, and I want to give my comments on it, and everyone will agree with me. And it's not brave, it's not like exciting, but it's just
never
like
outside the norm.
It's just like telling people like, hey, everybody's feels very strongly about this thing and it's trending, so I'm going to tweet about it too. Actually, it's really disgusting, but that can happen about political candidates or whatever, but it can also happen about, like, this has happened several times in esports, where the death of someone that I've worked with or that you've worked with a lot. People will just tweet about it to get likes, and I'm like, you never even knew this person.
Yeah, you didn't even know this fuck. I saw this when Jeff died. It just devastated me. I was on the Jeff passed. It was like afternoon in Xi'an. Were you at the event?
I was not at that event. Okay. I was actually in the States.
There was like an insane amount of casters, so I wasn't sure if I saw you down there, but he passed, and it was like, it was just like the worst fucking day ever. I had to tell like 30 different people that he died. So I was just like, I was in this state of like going, telling this person, seeing them freak out, telling the next person. Anyways, I went to bed that night, and we had to all take a bus to the airport. And that was when the news broke globally. And suddenly all these people that did not, first, some he did not even like, but other people that he just didn't really know, kind of. And I mean, it wasn't like a cute anecdotal story like, oh, he was once really nice to me this one time. I saw some stuff where I went, Jesus Christ.
People just outright lie.
Yeah.
Well, people just
outright
lie and act close to someone who passes because of that addiction to social media. They see someone who is close to Jeff, in this case, tweet some personal anecdote and get 5,000 likes on Twitter, and they think, oh, there's something to that. Like, I'm going to say, like, I met him at BlizzCon at a party and talked to him. He was really nice because it might get me 200 likes, or, like, it might put me on the map, even if that person has never.
Well, it's
disgusting.
They're treating their social media account like if they're just getting any engagement, it's good. And then what seems to happen now is the engagement you get on social media is the largest just for controversial emotional stuff.
Yeah, and that's like, I don't know, like I obviously I'm not going to name any names in the esports sphere, but I know some people who have gotten into this like addiction of like getting likes by politics or controversial issues, and or even just like getting addicted to like because a few tweets about sports did well or something. And they lose followers, and they wonder, why am I losing followers? And I'm like, well, because that person followed, your followers followed you for, like, your expertise in this particular game that you commentate,
yeah,
or this particular game you're an analyst of, or you play, if you're, like, a retired pro is tweeting a lot still. And now you've turned your Twitter into, like grabbing. And I think people see that. I think a lot of people see that, and they think, well, this is weird.
Yeah, and it's strange because, you know, it's a lot of these people, what they're doing is they're getting traction, but then they're actually making themselves unemployable or unlikable. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's the opposite of what you're doing. You've figured out how to market yourself and monetize yourself and connect. I mean, you're from the States. You're from Georgia,
yeah,
right? And in like the fact that you're here and you have a Korean food that now you helped collaborate to make. That's the ultimate example of somebody using social media to succeed and connect with people from different parts of the world. But I see other people who, and I mean, I'm using esports as an example because that's sort of what the show is centered around, but I see it all over the place where people have a tool they could have used to spread a good message or to crush it with, you know, their brand and promote themselves, and they just end up self-immolating on it.
Yeah, there's like this...
And exhibiting their lack of attractiveness.
If you... There's a certain, like, threshold for, like, making comments on particular issues, right? Like, I think you can make a statement if you feel really strongly about it. And you say, like, you know what, this is how I feel about this. Like, for example, it doesn't have to be politics. Like, there was this, like, meme with Artosis where he was talking about, like, people who unpause in games. Like, there was this, like, kind of Twitter thing where everyone had a different opinion, right? Like, oh, if you're gone for too long, like, it's safe to unpause. And, you know, some people are like, no, you should never unpause. You should just wait no matter what. Like, for StarCraft, right? In the middle of a StarCraft game, somebody pauses. My food's here, whatever. How long do you
wait?
Someone's
at the door, yeah.
It's fine to make, like, a statement on that, especially, like, if your following is, like, StarCraft, and you're like, yo, I have an opinion on that. It's okay to do something about politics or religion or something like that as well. But when your brand, when you create a brand on social media, you know, you have to follow it, and that's how you grow it. And if you, and it's hard for me because I kind of have two and I'm split, which is why I was saying earlier, like, I kind of regret that. But my tweets still fall into those two categories generally. Hardcore esports, mostly Korean esports, and then, like, you know, Korean memes for the most part. And if you deviate away from what built your brand in the first place, people will leave because they're like, well, it's almost like your Twitter feed for that particular person just becomes spam to them. They're not interested in your views on this. They might be one time, but if you become addicted to this sort of thing, it becomes self-emulating to not only to, like, companies that want to hire you, because I will tell you, and you know this, I will tell everyone out there, if you want to get hired, the less controversial you are, even if you think you're right and the people around you think you're right, the less controversial you are, the more likely you are to be hired, because no company wants a controversy. But not only that, but you will alienate yourself from your fans if you push too hard into one specific issue, because not all your fans will agree on that issue. Not all your fans care about the issue. They want to hear what you were talking about before the issue came up that you've become addicted to.
I think it's also, especially if you're somebody that's working in the industry, a lot of the big conversations you can have with the people that are in charge of it. You know, you don't have to have the conversation with every other person on the planet at the same time. You know, I mean, if I had a beef with a friend and I went to Twitter first, yeah, that would be the biggest signal that person shouldn't be friends with me anymore. Because I can't fucking keep it together. I'm unstable, and I'll use my phone, which I can then send off a bomb to everybody who's ever known me. That, I mean, it's a way to malign and slander somebody and put your side out of the story, but not theirs, in such
and
a way.
And for what? For a few likes on Twitter, they're not gonna. Yeah. You're not gonna get new followers from doing something like that. I think it's a weird addiction people have with, like.
Yeah.
I've experienced it too. Like, when I first blew up, like I told you, I was starting to tweet a lot, and I was like, I gotta grow. And then, like, my likes went down, and I felt, like, really shitty for a while. I was like, oh
yeah,
my last big tweet had like 2,000 likes, but then my tweet this time I thought was gonna be big had 60 likes. Like, am I dying? Like, and you start to get panicked, and you're like, well, maybe I should delete the tweet, and maybe I should do something else funny. You're like, I have fallen in that trap for a while. I'm not for, like, you know, it was all still according to my brand, but, like, I think social media for people is, like, a measurement of, like, how popular they are or, like, yeah, how successful they are, and they become so obsessed with it. So if they find some issue that's easy to get a lot of likes with, no matter what it is, they will just leap towards it, and I think that's super dangerous.
How long did it take you for you to pull away from that emotional connection with your account? Because I know this, I mean, I have this with my Twitch stream now, where I'll just see the numbers go up and down, and, like, oh man, I had like a couple hundred more people the other day. Why is it lower? Or, you know, I mean, there's days where subs are slower, or you don't get any donation. You know what I mean? And it becomes a sort of this weird emotional ride. And for me, I think I'm old enough, and I've dealt with social media long enough to realize, okay, this doesn't actually matter.
Yeah, for me, I think it took, like, when I was doing really well, I didn't really think about it too much. But, like, as I started to decline a little bit, and I wasn't posting as much, and I was losing followers, I started to stress about it. I'd say, like, for about like 9 months to a year, like, I was kind of still emotional about it, still stressed about it, like, still holding on to, like, the big boom from the beginning. And I think what really helped me get over it was talking to colleagues and other Korean personalities out here, some foreigners as well, but like mostly Korean personalities out here have big followings. Like, what do you do like when you're losing followers? Like, what's happened? Like, to me, like, what's happening to my Twitter? Like, what's happening to my Instagram? Like, did I fail? Did I blow it? And everyone was like, no, you just have to, you've got to do more than what you're doing. You got to diversify a little bit, but still keep your people. And like, don't worry about it, because like, when you diversify, people are not going to like it, but you just have to do it slowly. And like, I took that advice to heart, and eventually I started my YouTube channel, which has kind of brought me back into where I am now. For the longest time, I didn't want to do YouTube, even though everyone was like, you got to do YouTube.
I was the same way.
I was so scared that people wouldn't like my content.
I think people like us, though, are hardwired to avoid YouTube. Like you've started YouTube, I've started YouTube, which is where the show is going to be. A lot of the other people, I mean, I started mine a little bit earlier, but it was around the pandemic. A lot of people switched over. Why were we, in your opinion?
I think for me, and I think for you too, I mean, just based on your story of a commentator, of becoming a commentator and just walking up to the stage, right, at WCG, I think that for people like us, we want to do almost everything we do live. It has to be immediate. And even though this show isn't live right now, the way we do it is almost as if it is, right?
Right.
And then I think I realized when I was making my YouTube videos, the first few I did, I was so scared, because when you do what we do as commentators, everything is live. So if you make a mistake or do something funny, you just roll with it. And I like that feeling, and I like that adrenaline. Yeah.
And I like when I come out of it, like, I did it.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't great, even if I have a bad cast, I'm like, okay, well, there's nothing we can do.
Sure.
I got to come back next time.
But when you do a recording for people like us who've done most of our careers live, I think for the first few times you do a recording, you kind of have this panic feeling of like, it could have been better. We should redo that. You know, and like, at least that's like always in the back of my mind.
Dude, the intros for the podcast, the first couple episodes, it took me like 2 hours. It was like 3 minutes of me talking. I just kept doing it over and over and over again.
So like, I when I first did my first few YouTube videos, I was really nervous. I would actually like drink a little bit before the videos to like calm down. And then eventually I realized, I'm like, oh, I have like a whole plan for how I'm going to do these videos. And it's basically like I'm doing it live, kind of like this. Like,
yeah.
You don't redo any takes. You just roll with it. And if you make a mistake or do something funny, you just go with it. And then, like, that's really helped me do non-live content, like recorded content. And also, I was honestly, before starting YouTube, I was really scared that if I did content in Korean, people would be like, okay, well, when he speaks Korean, he mumbles, or he, like, is a little bit awkward. He's not perfect, but his tweets seemed really perfect. And like, the main reason for that is because, well, A, like, you have a lot more time when you're composing a tweet. Some of the big tweets I have, I thought about for 3 days before.
There's actually a lot of Koreans that will put out a tweet in English, and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, they can write that out.
And like, you know, I had friends help as well with some of the big tweets I wanted to do, but sometimes I just spent days on them. Whereas if you do like a YouTube video, you kind of have to just go, right? So I was worried that people were going to be like, oh, his Korean sucks, actually. I thought he would be better. But that was the opposite of what happened. People were like, "Well, your Korean's even better than I thought. I thought someone was writing all your tweets for you. I didn't realize you actually like speak Korean."
But when you did the YouTube stuff, did you feel like it was in part like because of the production element? Because it seems like simpler, that distract you as well?
Yeah, no, like for sure. I mean, my cameraman, he's the setup of my cameraman is like this tiny. The first camera is like this tiny Canon. I don't even know what version it is. But yeah. Like one of the digital cameras from like, you know, early 2010s you would bring to like your first trip to Europe, you know. And then like that's what we were filming on. We've since upgraded significantly. I didn't have a mic. I was just using the camera audio. Like we went from that to where I am now. And I still have a lot of room I can improve on. But yeah, it was scary. And I thought like, can we fix this stuff? If it's weird, if it's bad, like how can we edit? And like... I'll leave all that stuff up to cameraman, but like, it's just worked out better than I expected. I mean, it was crazy. My first video back to YouTube, I disabled a lot of my old videos. Like they still exist, but you can't see them, and I might re-upload them later. But I had like a bunch of weird videos I did in the past. I just kind of disabled. And I basically I launched the YouTube channel with a new Budechige video. Basically showing people, this is what I look like. You know, you see my tweets. This is what I look like. This is what I sound like. This is me moving, right? It's not a still picture. And then the video that was before that, I had retroactively subbed, which was a Budechige video I did with Brendan, who used to be a StarCraft commentator, League of Legends commentator, in 2013. And then I subbed that in Korean because it was all in English. So So people saw the Budichige video, then they were like, let's go to his channel. And they saw, like, the only other video that's on the channel is a video from 7 years before, me eating Budichige with Brendan. And I thought, oh, that's a great way to launch my channel again to Korean fans.
Yeah.
And the video got almost 500,000 views in a month. And I was like, holy shit, I guess I'm doing this now.
Yeah. Congratulations, man. How has streaming been for you?
Streaming has been hard, you know? Like, I tweet about my stream in English, sometimes I tweet about it in Korean. And I'm obviously a native English speaker. My Korean is pretty fluent, but it's not native. And most of the people who come to my stream speak English. So sometimes Korean fans come in and they speak Korean to me in the chat, and I answer them back in Korean. But they don't stay very long because they don't talk very much in the chat. Most of my chat's in English, so I end up speaking English most of the time.
It seems like it's really hard to have a bilingual
chat. It really is.
It almost seems like you'd have to have like a second stream.
I've seen some people who stream bilingually. Like, there's a lot of Korean female Korean streamers who are gamers that I've watched their streams of, and they do really well. Like, some of them are like Korean American, some of them are not, but they're bilingual, right? Korean and English. And what they do is, like, every sentence they say in both languages. Even if, like, the majority of the viewers are Korean or the majority of viewers are in English, they just do it every time. Like, it's just, like, a setting for them. And I'm like, ooh, I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I'm ready for that. But my stream has been very small. I want to grow my stream, but I don't know if this is the right time. Maybe I should try giving YouTube a shot, using, like, YouTube as my platform for Korean stream.
Have you thought about Africa TV? I mean,
yeah, I have, and I want it to be really good. Like, the thing is, because of what everything I've done in Korean, like, that's specifically geared towards Koreans, has been, like, in my opinion, as best quality as I can, and that's why I don't upload that many YouTube videos as much as I used to, because I'm trying to make sure each one is quality. If I do a Freaka TV broadcast, which I might, it's going to be, like, a big launch thing where I'm, like, I tell people about it a week in advance. I have a whole thing planned. I've got, like, an insane lighting setup, better than what I have now. And it has to be, like, quality. Because I don't want to just kind of, like, go in and be like, hey, let's see how it goes, and just, like, not care. Like, I want to go all in. So I'm still thinking about doing YouTube. But right now my stream is just me playing old games with my streamer base, which is, like, on average, like, 30 to 40 people just chilling with me. And because I'm not making money off of it, maybe I will one day. But right now it's just kind of like my instead of going out with my friends and going to the bar at night because we have COVID and everything, I'm just like drinking a beer with my stream viewers. So that's like kind of my chill experience. That's my stream right now.
Before we wrap it up here, where can people get your jjigae? What's the name of the place?
King Kong Budichige is the name of the chain. It's only in Korea right now, and it's mostly in Seoul.
Do they have any restaurants outside the country at all?
I don't think so. I know that there's a lot of interest within the company of branching out to maybe doing a branch in like LA or something like that. But at the moment, as far as I know, I don't think there's any branches outside of Korea. So unfortunately, you guys are out of luck if you're outside of Korea, and it's really hard to come here right now. But the good news is it's running until like mid to late May, the promotion I'm running right now. So it's, you know, if you're coming like later next summer or something, you're doing like an internship or you're coming to study like around that time, you might still get a chance. And if it continues to sell well, it might get extended. So you might not miss your chance. But yeah, if you're outside of Korea right now, unfortunately, you're just going to have to eat it with your eyes.
Congratulations, man. So cool. Is there anything else you have in the pipeline, or can you not talk about it?
There's some stuff I have coming up esports wise. It'll be exciting to announce. I can't talk about it yet. Otherwise, like, you know, I did a TV program out here with one of the famous comedians, UJ Suk. It was really fun. I've got a few more TV programs I'm set to appear in the next few weeks, so you'll probably hear about it on my Twitter. And otherwise, like, just follow my channel. Like, check out my YouTube channel, subscribe. All my videos are subbed in English, even if I speak in Korean the whole time, so check it out. It's a good channel, I think, you know?
I think it's fucking awesome what you're doing, man. I'm really happy for you. It's really cool. You've succeeded in esports, and now you're doing this whole other thing. So congratulations, man. And your Twitch channel is what?
Wolf_Schroeder. You might want to put that in the description. It might be hard to spell for people.
And we can put a graphic in on the video, too.
My other ID is just Proxy Wolf. So if you search that, you'll find me, all my other stuff.
All right, guys. It's good to be back doing the podcast. Thank you for watching. Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. Again, if you enjoy this kind of content and you want to keep seeing it, the best way to support us is to go to patreon.com/tastelesspodcast. You get access to behind-the-scenes recordings and a bunch of other stuff. So, guys, I love you guys. I really am excited to fucking get vaccinated and to be out of this whole COVID nightmare. Lockdown is making me kind of crazy here. I hope you guys stay safe. Keep washing your hands, wearing a mask. And I'll see you guys in the next episode of the podcast or on my stream at twitch.tv/tastelessTV. You can always hang out with me there, too. We don't have any more casts for a couple months here for StarCraft 2, so I'm looking forward to seeing you guys in the casting space. But until then, just streaming and the podcast. Love you guys. Bye-bye. This episode was produced by State, artwork by Alarise, music by Mark Lentz.